take a minute to check your social battery. How's it doing? It's easy to ignore our needs and spread ourselves too thin. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a schedule that works for you. Start the process in minutes and switch therapists anytime. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/popcastpod today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/popcastpod.
Welcome to the New York Times Popcast. I got so many hits, I can't remember them all, of music, news, and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica.
Wasted on Sunday, erase your on Monday.
Do you feel the smear? Sometimes, do you have a song that feels like a smear? Or a week that feels like a smear? We are back after a week off. Sometimes, so many things are happening all at once that it is hard to isolate a feeling or a mood. That is how the last week or two have been for me. And that is how it is listening to the work of Post Malone. So it is only fitting that we are back strong on that Post Malone Hollywood's Bleeding energy. That was Allergic that we were opening up with. Get your face tech kit out. Hollywood's Bleeding is the new Post Malone album. It came out a couple weeks ago. It is, or was, or is, still is, I don't know. It's the number one album in the country, or was the number one album in the country. I'm sure Taylor Swift would like to have a word with Austin. Also, sidebar, why are Taylor Swift and Austin not working together? That's just a, maybe we can get back to that. Anyway, Post Malone is everywhere. He is seeping into every corner of your playlist ecosystem. A lot of people don't like it. I happen to like it a lot. Another person who likes it a lot is Jason Green. And so I got Jason Green in here so we can address the bad shoes and clothes in the room, basically. Jason.
Hi.
Jason reviewed Hollywood Bleeding for Pitchfork. He was a senior editor there, remains a contributing editor. Also, author of the memoir, Once More We Saw Stars. Jason, in your review, the thing that I think was probably jumped out at me most in your review is there is a undercurrent in it that Post Malone, one of the 10 most popular musicians in the United States, needed to be taken up for.
Weirdly, so yes.
Yeah, and like I'm not one of these people. Like, look, I think you can be pop and terrible. I think you could be pop and great. Like, it's not, we're past all that.
Yeah.
R.I.P. Poptimism.
Yeah,
which was never a thing. To all my people on Twitter who like think that was a thing, that was never a thing.
You're not getting me on record about that.
Wow, you come back for part two. I just want everyone who's listening to know that poptimism was never a thing. It
okay,
was only
cool.
The byproduct of people who were close-minded to start with. Some of us didn't have that problem.
Fair.
So
okay.
While
fair.
We're here, just
speaking of which,
little
so
side
that,
shot.
That brings us to here.
Yes. So Post Malone yet somehow needed to be taken up for, even
yeah.
though plenty of people have said that Post Malone is a quality musician, myself among them. You felt.
I mean,
I don't
it's
know if
weird,
is the mic
man.
Picking this up.
Yeah, I think probably. Yeah,
planning
I think
a play.
It can feel it. I think
yes.
you can feel it.
Why'd you do it?
I mean, man, in a more pure world, I wouldn't have had to
Woo!
Do the argument where I said, "Listen, guys, hold up my hand, step in front of the hordes of people, and be
right.
like, this is a good kid." I wouldn't have had to vouch
right.
for Post Malone because I could have just made the case for what I think is actually kind of amazing
yeah.
about his music. Now, there's this thing that happens, and if your job is to come out here and talk about why music's interesting, you don't always get the juicy angle you're looking for if you're pointing to the most dominant person on the planet. It's sort of hard sometimes.
Yes.
It's sort of like saying, hey, mashed potatoes, guys. Have we talked about them in a while?
Sure.
They're really good.
Wow.
So sometimes you get that angle where people kind of come in and they feel like, I need something to make my thoughts on this a little bit juicier, riper, whatever. And so for me, to, you know, maybe part of it is that like, oh, if I'm really out here just being like a cultural critic, Post Malone is good isn't enough of a take. I have to figure out something else I'm saying about Post Malone. But ultimately, I really think he's pretty good. I think he's actually quite good. And it's interesting to me, the massive, massive gap that currently separates people's perceptions of what his music represents, which is like dullness, hegemony,
yeah,
uniformity, mm-hmm, stupefying blandness, I would say, or things that people think about his music.
All untrue.
Right. But I would say that they're things that people say. A lot of people are saying, quote unquote.
And I don't know her.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about it.
And kind of the actual functional qualities of his music. So for me, I think I understand it, right? If every single song on your album is on the Billboard charts, and that's the case, there's a 1-to-1 ratio between Post Malone songs that exist and Post Malone songs that have been in the top 20.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, it's absurd.
It's only him and Drake.
Right, exactly.
Those are the only people. Even Taylor didn't pull this off.
No, yeah. not really. Well, I think that's interesting, right? Because, I mean, Post Malone, as you called him emotional tofu, which I thought was spectacular. Because it's just the idea that there's something very filler cube-like about his music. It sort of does take on the flavor, whatever is around it. And I thought that's fascinating. It's actually not that easy to do.
No,
it's not that easy to be that singer.
I think the reason people think it doesn't happen a lot is because it takes... Or the reason he's able to do it is because it requires a certain kind of stupidity. But I actually think it's the opposite of that. It requires a kind of a progressive flexibility and understanding of the different contexts that other people that you might be working with require or would thrive in, and having the actual acuity to kind of morph into those places, into those shapes.
And I think what's happening, too, is that, I mean— there's a certain antipathy to this guy that comes from he's the return of the dirtbag, right?
Woo.
The dirtbag is returning to the pop cultural stage, right? That whole idea, that look, I wrote this thing too last year about him, a year even earlier in the Post Malone cycle, when it was basically like, I can't even think of the analog. I was out here like advocating for itchy rashes. That's how popular he was in the critical consensus. I talked about how basically he's like sublime. He's Bradley Noble incarnate. Yeah. He's like that dude. It's like the sunburn, beer belly, tatted up guy who thinks all the music kind of mixes together. And like traditionally, it's been a lot of people like that who mix up music like that.
And when we think of, I remember the kind of anxiety of probably the mid to late 2000s, where you realize that the internet was going to create a generation of young people who had all this access across genre, including to hip-hop and R&B, and it's not just white kids accessing white genres and black kids, you know.
Right.
And I began to realize that there were going to be distinct musical forms that occurred 100% as the byproduct of someone having early and widespread access across genre.
Exactly.
And to me, Drake is like the halfway step there, and Post Malone is like the full step there.
Right.
And when people say that he's formless or genreless or whatever, and I'm sure I've said a version of that, I think they mean it backhandedly.
Yeah.
I tend to mean it as kind of like, this is like, there's an evolutionary step that's happening here.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
I think that the songwriting on his albums is generally kind of amazing.
Mm-hmm. Structurally.
Even going back to Stoney, pretty amazing. Like, the melodies on there are incredible. And
this is a Louis Bell extravaganza.
Yeah, or like Money Made Me Do It, which has a song that... the melody on that song literally sounds like a Toby Keith chorus. Like, and even back then, I was thinking, you know, there's something going on here.
Let's talk about me. Sorry. I just had to get a little Toby off.
I mean, some of it's that he has a weird, cool voice, just to put it bluntly. Like, that's not a normal pop voice
in
any regard. In the one hand, he can kind of sing any kind of song because his voice is super malleable.
Yeah.
Like, he can kind of sound like a crooner. He can kind of sound like the lead singer of a grunge band. He can kind of sound like a pop singer. He can kind of sound Drake-y. But, like... his voice is deeply, distinctly bizarre. Like, it has this warble in it that's not vibrato. It's, like, not what you're supposed to do at all with your throat.
Yeah,
like,
it's not vibrato. That's a good point. It's like a decaying whine.
Yes. It's basically the Bobcat Goldthwait voice.
Whew.
But, like,
salute to a real king.
Salute to a real king, yeah.
My God.
I mean, but there's something very weird and unstable about it. And so when you have a voice that versatile, you can use it in a song that might sound a little bit like a country ballad.
Mm-hmm.
You can use it in a song that might sound a little bit... like a trap banger. You can use it in a song that might sound a little bit like a pop punk song.
Let's talk a little bit about Post Malone as kind of a pop figure, because I'd love to play a little bit of Sunflower, which was off the Spider-Man Spider-Verse soundtrack.
Classic, by the way.
Very much so, right? All right, let's listen to a little bit of that.
Innocent say I keep a check. She was a bad, nevertheless.
sideways, party on tilt. Ooh, certain things you just can't refuse. She wanna ride me like a cruise, and I'm not trying to lose. Then you're left in the dust, unless I stuck by ya. You're a sunflower, I think your love would be too much. Or you'd be left in the dust, unless I stuck by ya.
Okay, so I remember when I first heard this song, thinking that it was perhaps too sublime to actually work.
Sublime with a capital S?
No. Too sublime with a lowercase s to actually work. I was just like, man, this is so soft focus and poetic and tender.
Yeah, tender. And bizarrely.
I was like, oh, you know, it's a soundtrack song. Like, maybe it'll kind of come and go. I remember being very pleasantly surprised. You know, whatever week came out, we have our Friday playlist. And I was like, oh, this is like a nice, refreshing palate cleanse of a song. And then it turned into one of the biggest songs of the year. And I think, to me, it's maybe the least Post Malone of big Post Malone hits. Obviously, Sway Lee carries a lot of this record. But it reminded me of, again, his intense versatility.
Yeah.
And that he could do this incredible... I think I joked about it being a smear earlier. When I say smear, I mean with rough edges. Like, I mean modeled. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
This is not that. It is soft focus, but it's a clean melody. Structurally, it's incredibly elegant.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful song, and Post Malone can do that as well.
Yeah, he can.
He can frame himself. He can orient himself in relationship to centrist pop. I often think of Post Malone orienting himself in relationship to hip-hop, in relationship to other non-centrist genres, or at least what are perceived as non-centrist genres. This is a song where I think he's orienting himself from the other direction.
Right, but it's interesting because it's working with Sway Lee, who's purely hip-hop.
Yes, although Sway Lee, I think, is increasingly trying to move. That felt like a very strategic thing for Sway Lee.
Yeah, on the Spider-Man soundtrack and all that. But, like, Ray Shrimmer are not, like, I mean, they're super catchy.
Yes.
But they're not in the center.
They're my in the morning, they're my morning alarm. No Flex Zone.
Flex Zone is a really good way to wake up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're telling me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So tell me about that part of Post Malone, the pop structure aficionado.
He seems like kind of a, like, legit hippie kind of character in a way. Like, that's what's interesting to me about his persona is that kind of people look at him and perceive him as this toxic figure. You know, there's plenty of...
You
kind
mean
of
literally physically, biohazard?
Biologically
toxic.
Like
a biohazard?
He does joke about how bad he smells, but no. I mean, in the sense that he's, like, malignant or something. And he said some really dumb stuff. I mean, the stuff that comes out of his mouth...
Yeah, and we should remind that part two, we're going to talk to Jonah Weiner, who did spend time with Post Malone, unlike many journalists who have not spent time with Post Malone. So we'll be hearing more about perhaps ode to Post Malone... Yeah. Later, like perhaps.
Post Malone, man. Yeah,
we'll find out.
Exactly. That's evocative just by itself. So to finish that winding thought, what's interesting to me is that though he presents that way in the culture, I think he reminds people of a kind of rap rock moment also with a lot of bad associations like the Fred Dursts and the toxic masculinity that kind of prevailed. And then he opens his mouth and says stuff that...
You mean great American race traders like Fred Durst?
Yes, also not getting me on record. But what's weird is that his music is often quite tender.
Yeah.
And sweet.
Very much
so. You're My Sunflower. That is a tender, sweet song about like lasting love. That's literally the message of the lyrics. And Better Now, which is another huge hit of his, is basically a breakup ballad where he just plainly wishes the person who left him well.
Yeah.
Which is such a contrast to, say, You're Hobo Johnson, where it's, I wish you well, but now I'm going to kill myself and it's your fault. You know,
he's just doing thrice warmed over slug.
Right.
Come on.
That's appetizing.
Come on.
Shout out to slug. How's it going,
man? Really good, man.
Yeah.
Okay, let's actually listen to Better Now, which is a very beautiful song. And looking on my Spotify, has more than 1 billion streams on Spotify.
Wow, that's a lot of them.
Yeah.
You probably think that you are better now, better now. You only say that because I'm not around, not around. You know I never meant to let you down, let you down. Would've gave you anything, would've gave you everything. You know I said that. Down.
not even speaking to my friends, no. You knew all my uncles and my aunts, though. 20 candles, blow them out and open your eyes. We were looking forward to the rest of our lives. Used to keep my picture posted by your bedside. Now I see you dress up with the socks you don't like. And I'm rolling, 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 rolling with my brothers like it's Jonas, Jonas. Drinking Henny and I'm trying to forget, but I can't get it out of my head. You probably think that you are better now, better now. You only say.
Let's talk about that uncomfortable conversation about genre.
Yeah, okay.
In my mind, I perceive Post Malone as fundamentally someone birthed of hip-hop, but from an era where hip-hop was already far away from kind of what people of my generation and your generation mm-hmm. would have thought of vis-a-vis 80s, 90s, 80s hip-hop and 90s hip-hop.
Yeah.
So he's birthed from kind of like 808s and Art to Cudi to Dre. Like that's his
lineage.
That's his origin story. Yeah. And so that's where you're starting from, but you're also interested in Bob Dylan, country music, et cetera, et cetera. Right. It's going to take you in some unanticipated directions. And so do you perceive his origin story that way? And do you think that where he has landed now on this current album or just generally in the universe still carries those associations?
And he dresses and walks around like someone who has fallen out of hip hop's closet. Like it's just mm-hmm. like, you know, all the, but that's also pretty typical pop star
point.
Stuff at this point.
Yes.
Like, you know, the huge taffy-colored stretch Humvee that he rides around in, there's a lot of, like, iconography and stuff that he does that is clearly stuff that you do because you watched hip-hop stars
yes.
do it. And, you know, yeah, I mean, in the way that I think his look, his tattoos, his everything is of someone who grew up listening to hip-hop from a very, very early age at a time when it wasn't even that much as stigmatized of an art form as it was
no,
even
exactly.
10 years earlier.
Right, and that is crucial and important
right.
to remember.
I just think that there's like a sort of, I hate to use the word like innocence, people are upset at him for the way that he has made
yes.
a lot of money off of this culture
yeah,
in some ways. While
and he plays Fast and Loose with Signifiers.
While crapping on it, he plays Fast and Loose with Signifiers. But I do perceive this sort of inherent like, what's the problem kind of vibe from him about all of this stuff.
Well, there's the, and this is where the inevitability comes in. And I remember mm-hmm. at the time of Macklemore's rise, I remember thinking, uh-oh, there's going to be 30 guys like this.
Yeah.
Like whatever you think of the musical merits of Macklemore, you
right.
know, like
right.
pro or con, my concern was that it was going to open the floodgates for a whole bunch of people who basically would come to dominate like what we think of as the like the hip hop charts or whatever.
Right.
Like there were going to be dozens right. and dozens and dozens because labels would be trying to find and cultivate and shoving down the throats of radio and streaming
liberal
all these figures.
Rappers,
right.
Yeah.
And that didn't happen. And
right.
I think that is a testament to the consistent ingenuity of people who are inside hip hop that things are moving and evolving in rapid phases, and you can't just
also pop music energy is disreputable energy.
It's oh,
disreputable
absolutely.
Energy. So whoever's going towards like the sleazier throb of mm-hmm. energy, the slightly less savory way to associate with the culture, mm-hmm. the whatever it is, the less clean take on whatever it is going to be the one that attracts more attention.
Ultimately.
Macklemore seemed like he was so concerned with having some kind of weird spotless cultural resume
mm-hmm.
that he was so sealed off from the larger culture. Can you imagine a Macklemore song with Swae Lee ever in a billion years?
Well, actually, low-key, I can.
Oh, you can?
I can, because I...
My imagination is not as good as yours.
No, well, yes. Maybe I am being fanciful. I don't think it would sound like the Post Malone and Swae Lee song.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
right.
And I've always been of the mindset with Macklemore that at some point, and I actually kind of expected it to happen already, but it hasn't. But I feel like at some point, probably maybe in the next 3 to 5 years, you're going to get... like the real rap album. Like you're gonna get the I collaborated with this with Young
sure,
Thug.
Sure, I could see that too.
You collaborated
yeah.
with Swae Lee. I collaborated
right.
with Black Thought. I collaborated with da da da. Like you're gonna get that from him.
Probably
I
true.
Do think so.
Probably true.
Even if it's just to prove a point.
Right.
To,
but that's the thing. Post Malone's not
to
prove
to
any
you,
points.
Maybe, or to
his,
me.
His pop music is not trying to prove points.
So anyway, the point. But the thing about Post Malone and
yeah.
So what didn't happen are 30 Macklemores.
Right.
What did happen is Post Malone.
Right.
And that's because the energy, the way that a white figure was choosing to engage with hip-hop, Macklemore chose to engage with it like very direct, like head on and say, I don't my experiences are very different, but yeah. I am a rapper. I make pop-oriented, optimistic rap music.
Yeah.
And it happens to be loved by millions and millions and millions of people. Post Malone kind of like took the back door.
Yeah.
Was
totally.
Sort of like, yeah, I'm into that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm basically going to play with all this stuff, but I'm going to do it in a way that's not super overt. It's not beating you over the head with it. And, like, maybe I'll kind of get away with it.
Yeah.
And then, like, before anybody noticed, he was basically one of the most popular people on the planet.
Well, and also what we're not talking about is the fact that he had a breakout song where he had gold teeth and braids.
Yes.
He called himself White Iverson.
Yes.
Like, that's a huge elephant in the room.
We should. Let's listen to White Iverson.
Yeah.
Watch out, oh, watch out, oh, watch out, oh, yeah. I smash out, yeah. I'm spending on my pay. I got me some braids and I got me some. Started rocking the sleeve, I can't buy with no jaws. You know how I do it, can close on my toes. Oh, I ain't rich yet, but you know I ain't broke. So if I see it, I like it about that from the start. I'm with some white girls and they love to know. Like they OT, double OT, like I'm KD, smoking OG. And you know me, and my 2-3s and my gold teeth. Smiling, you see me from the nosebleed. I'm the new 3 and I change out to my new D. White Iverson.
Or as we like to say, Bone Iverson.
That's amazing.
Yeah, but that's what I like to say. I think I was the first person to say that on Twitter.
White Justin Vernon.
I think yeah. I was the someone do the Twitter deep search. Someone do the advanced search. I think I was the first person to say Bone Iverson.
I'm going to go ahead and credit you. I feel like
I think it's fair. I mean, if I didn't, it was in my soul regardless.
You're going to be the Jerry of the Bone Iverson tweet.
That's exactly right. I think when it ends up in the Webster's Dictionary, like, you know, 20 years from now, like, I want to be properly credited for it.
Yeah.
So White Iverson, again, and now Post Malone he was a SoundCloud guy.
Yeah.
Like, let's not forget, like, he was a SoundCloud guy before SoundCloud rap. Like, he was a SoundCloud guy when, like, you would just put songs up and, like, maybe somebody would stumble upon them before there was, like, a real reason to go to SoundCloud.
And I think those things, I mean, that's like the weird, funky legacy he carries around. That stuff's pretty lamentable, both as music and as like an attempt at hip hop.
You don't like White Iverson?
White Iverson's fine.
Oh, okay.
But all the other, have you listened to 5 other songs by him from that time period? Man, it is.
No, I think
rough going, dude.
No, nothing that didn't make it onto Stony.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, just there's like a bunch of Lucy's from
okay,
that time.
That's not good.
Terrible. Like, kind of, to me, objectively terrible because it was really trying to be. Like, I mean, it almost sounded like he was trying to be like a white Future. It was a very weird lane at the time. And so I think now, like, he's no longer really that guy. Like, his lyrics on Hollywood's Bleeding, there's a couple of references to like the carrots on his fist and the mealy on his wrist and stuff like that. Really kind of like knocked off somewhat lazy hip hop lyrics.
And
but
also
like,
actual Future is on this record.
Right, and right, for sure. Yes. But what's funny is that as he's moved like closer to the center of pop and he can afford and he can attract, you know, rappers to appear in his records, his own music has moved way more close to like to just rock, pop.
Also,
pop rock, essentially.
We should talk a little bit about how records get made, because a thing that I think people who are on the outside of the music business don't really understand, there is a very, very high degree of social grace. What rooms are you in? What studios are you in? Who likes you enough to send you good beats? Who likes you enough to show up and give a verse? Or, like, if you're going to email them a track, that they'll actually rap on it in a way that's good and usable that you can then use.
Well,
and by all accounts, Post Malone is a good hang.
Yeah.
Very affable.
Yes.
Solid bro.
Yes, I'm sure that helps him out a lot.
Things that are not necessarily important to me as a person.
Yeah.
But my sense, when you see people talk about Post Malone, like when you read not Post Malone coverage, but you see in some interview with someone else referencing what working with Post Malone is like, you get the sense that he is someone who makes himself affable.
Sure.
And people want to participate in whatever the thing is that he's got going.
I mean, I think I called him a sentient keg stand. He's that dude.
Great.
He's that bro. He's ready to party. Mm-hmm. Like, he's definitely, that's his persona for
sure.
But I also think, you know, by virtue of how popular he got, like, when you get that popular, people give you their first thing. They give you their best verse.
Right, yes, you mentioned it is absolutely
like,
true.
They give you, they're like, oh, okay, this is going on the Post Malone record. Okay, let me see what I got. Okay,
well, it's also
going
to stream a billion times.
It's, this is going to be my biggest look of my entire career, maybe, depending on who I am.
Absolutely.
You know, if I'm Halsey, this might be a whole new audience for me. If I'm, you know, this is a huge moment. Not that Halsey's not popular, but it's like a huge look.
Okay, so let's listen to two examples of the thing you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Let's listen to a tiny bit of the Halsey verse on Die For Me. Mm-hmm. This is also features Halsey and Future, which is two great tastes that taste great together.
I agree.
I should say. I would like to hear a best of both worlds with Halsey and Future.
That is an amazing idea.
I honestly, yes. if people are working at a record label listening to this, and I know you are, make that happen. That's number one.
You heard
then
the man.
Then we're going to listen to a little bit of Enemies with DaBaby, who has not met a track that he did not want to hop on in the last 3 months. He's also on the Lil Nas X remix and is not good. However, this is very good. So let's hear how two artists as different as Halsey and DaBaby work in the Post Malone ecosystem. Said you take a bullet, told me you would die for me. I had a really bad feeling, you've been lying to me. We were on the low, but you were getting high with me. That's a different side I see. Settle down, I spell it out, it's simple enough. I came around, I figured out you follow my gut. I don't play anymore. I went through your phone and called the girls in your DMs and took all them home. And I know it's been a while since the last time you heard from me. Growing to a savage and that's why they give this verse to me. Turns out it shows, cause they turn out as shows. I sold 50 million copies of a breakup note. Rising strangers in our bed. Tonight you lost your right to privacy. Spilling all our secrets when you thought they'd probably die with me. No, you've buried on the low. And you don't have to say I'm crazy cause I know. Close to my enemy. Let's go. I need better energy. When I told you, you thought I was playing, huh? Yeah. But I made it litter. She wanted to buy, but I told her, fuck that. Nope. She look at me like she's surprised. Packing the post. And I'm home alone. When the box hit the door, they go for 35. Yeah. I tried to put on for my partners. They turn into enemies right before it. If you reach for a shake, I'ma hold out a fist. Give it a quarter pound without the fry. And I just went double platinum with no features just to show it. I don't really need it. Pass a man a plate and he can make a shake. It's guaranteed to put him by the hand and feed him. And I know you think that I ain't see it. So I was consistently shocked when I was listening to this record. How well everyone fits. And again, the reason everyone fits, and not to make like a fashion metaphor, right? But it's like putting, it is really like putting an outfit together and you're like, oh, the green in my belt picks up the green on the shoe. Or like I wore a coat and the silhouette of the coat kind of goes with the flare at the bottom of the pant. Post Malone has enough stuff in his tapestry that you can put almost anything up against it, and something in his tapestry will accentuate.
Totally. Also, hip-hop has been so melodic in the last 3 or 4 years. It steered its way over to pop rock so steadily. Like, you know, the fact that Future's voice can appear next to Halsey's, next to Post Malone's.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it's much easier to put together an outfit right now than it was. And I mean, I think his music is kind of testimony to that. Like, I will say this, for as good as it is, it does not seem like it's very hard for them to make their music. It seems like they put it together more or less constantly. Mm-hmm. Like, it's him and this guy Frank Dukes, mm-hmm. who's a producer who mostly works with rappers, mm-hmm. and this guy Louis Bell, who is kind of like the producer's Svengali role. And the three of them basically
I don't know if I did this on – did I do this on Popcast Pager where I called him the Max Martin of the Xanax era?
That's incredible, and that sounds exactly right. So, the three of them just kind of churn out like these lumps, emotional tofu, to use your term, of this kind of pop rocky but also kind of you can put an 808 on it. I mean, I also feel like – while Post Malone's like the perfect person for this moment, this moment has also been like arriving. He just spat out the tube.
A thing I've thought a lot about in the context of Drake is this kind of like submersive quality.
Right.
I wrote a thing I remember actually about Post Malone and Ray Schremert a couple years ago where I was talking about how well their music was suited to a streaming ecosystem.
Yeah.
Because the entire point of streaming is you press play and hopefully never press stop.
Right.
And what better music than, like, literally buried underwater music with a melodic line that kind of, like, doesn't have high peaks or low lows.
Yep.
It just kind of, like, carries you along, cradles you from out of one song and into the next song. This is what Post Malone's very good at. And it is striking because with DaBaby or even Meek Mill on this record, I don't consider them to be artists like that.
No,
Halsey functions like that.
Yeah.
But I don't think those guys function like that. And yet, in this context, it's almost as if they're trying to, like a shark jumping out of the ocean, and then the ocean is, like, pulling him back. Like, at the same time, like, a thousand arms are reaching out of the ocean to, like, pull him back down underwater. But yet it kind of works.
Also, they serve that same goal, because at some point you might say, man, maybe it'd be better if I was listening to hardcore hip-hop right now. Then Meek pops out, and then he goes away. And so you can never say, I should change this to listen to something else, because you're listening to a little bit of all of it.
That's true. There is one song on this record that takes that logic maybe even one or two steps further. That's the Ozzy song.
Yeah.
I know you're into that song.
Very.
Explain to me. Also, did I read a news item recently that Ozzy completed an album with either these producers or, like, with producers who are, like, adjacent to this world?
He expressed an interest in working with Post Malone again, and he said this was his favorite thing he's done since Black Sabbath. Something insane like that.
I mean, to be fair, he's been on reality television for 25 years. Like,
take that for what it's worth. Yeah. But I think that was the news item I saw.
I'm going to just Google real fast while you pontificate about
this. To me,
this
was like Post Malone's dirtbag Quentin Tarantino moment, where he went and got some, like, kind of weird prestige casting.
Wait, Ozzy Osbourne. Here's a headline from Consequence of Sound. Shouts to our friends at Consequence of Sound. Ozzy Osbourne is finished with new solo album, calls it his greatest ever. The Deck, the new LP, was recorded with Post Malone producer Andrew Watt. He's not the A-team producer. He's like the B-team producer, right? Andrew Watt.
Yeah, but he's involved in a lot of the sessions as well. Fair. Yeah.
No shots, Andrew.
Yeah, no shots.
We appreciate
part of that weird little camp of people.
So that's great. And Ozzy Osbourne album is going to sound like Post Malone. But anyway, go on.
Yeah, it is basically just a Ozzy Osbourne power ballad.
Yes.
Straight up.
Like a real, like, early to mid-80s kind of?
Even early mid-90s. We did, like, Mama, I'm Coming Home, era. Like, just like a huge power ballad. Like, from an era, like, that was what the radio sounded like. Like, massive, huge Damn Yankees era power ballads, like insanely overblown
to
production.
Be the next to be with you.
Although that's Mr. Big technically, but you know that. Can I take you high? That's Damn Yankees. But it just felt like this.
Should we harmonize?
Yeah. Can you join in, please? I'm killing myself, frankly. I don't know how I got here. Mm. But Ozzy Osbourne and Post Malone brought me here. I mean, they just sort of exhumed this 80s power ballad with Ozzy. And to me, I was making this point. It feels like, you know, when Quentin Tarantino dredges up John Travolta at a point when he has
no
cachet at all. I was like, hey, look at this guy. He looks pretty good, right? And I feel like Post Malone's at the weird phase of his pop stardom where he now is afforded the ability to make that move.
And I also think that Post Malone didn't grow up with Ozzy music. He grew up with Ozzy as, like, cultural touchstone.
Like a partying.
Yeah, like the dad on TV.
Right.
He understands that Ozzy, like, you know, would bite the head off a bat or whatever it is that Ozzy did in the late 70s. But, like, he didn't grow up with that. But I think Post Malone, there is, for all of Post Malone's kind of, like, shrug in terms of how he presents, it is devious and strategic, like everything, all the choices. And I think him making a connection to a rock star of an earlier era, a more ambitious era, et cetera, it's him sort of saying, I want to be identified like that.
Totally.
And less with where I've been. Well, it's like a gesture.
It's also that era of rock star. When the rock stars, I mean, you weren't expected to say or do profound things when you were a rock star in the late 80s and early 90s, just before.
True story.
You know, like, your job was to, like, do splits.
Yes.
Appear in concert music videos.
Right.
And just, like, leave trails of wreckage behind you. Like,
and
you
a lot of hairspray.
Yeah. You were literally just like a rock star dinosaur, like, roaming the earth. Mm-hmm. Like, that is, like, to me, that's like the spiritual animal for Post Malone's career right now. I feel like he looks at that and he's like, that's what I am now.
So should we go out on this Ozzy Osbourne moment?
I mean, you mean on Damn Yankees High Enough?
Oh my gosh.
Yes, we should go out on the Ozzy track, I think. That's only fair. Also, the guitar solo on this track is the most absurd and hilarious thing I've heard on a record.
Let's go out with, this is Take What You Want. We'll start with a little bit of the Ozzy part in the beginning, and then we will smear it into the guitar towards the end. Jason, thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me, John.
I feel you crumbling, my arms down to your heart of stone. You bled me dry just like the tears you never showed. Why don't you take what you want from me? Take what you need from me? Take what you want.
some quick shilling today. If you are into white dudes with tattoos who are into hip hop, boy, have I got something else for you when you're off this Post Malone kick. All right, so on October 5th, me and the boy Sam Sifton are sitting down with Action Bronson. It's for the New York Times Food Festival, nytfoodfestival.com. You could buy a ticket to that. Action Bronson, you may or may not know, famously, or maybe not famously, has a lyric where he mentions both me and Sam Sifton. And so the food festival, in its vast genius, decided to bring that lyric to life. So me, Bronson, Sifton, probably talking about Rollin' Roaster. Get your tickets.
Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
My name is Thomas Gibbsneff. I'm a journalist at the New York Times. I served in the Marine Corps as an infantryman. When it comes to reporting on the front line, a lot of the same basics are at play. You're looking at the map of where you're going. If you're on a paved road, field roads, you know, is there a hospital nearby? Is your body armor affixed with the first aid kit? Does everyone know where that first aid kit is? We arrive into a military position. I get out of the car. I look at my watch. You know, I set a timer, no more than an hour. I'm listening for drones, jets, check in with the team. Is everyone comfortable? And if they are, then we proceed. Frontline reporting is dangerous, but I think nothing is more important than talking to the people involved, you know, hearing their stories and being able to connect that with people thousands of miles away. Anything that can make something like this more personal, I think, is well worth the risk. New York Times subscribers make it possible for us to keep doing this vital coverage. If you'd like to subscribe, you can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Me and Kurt feel the same. Too much pleasure is pain. My girl spites me in vain. All I do is complain. She needs something to change. Need to take off the ass. So get all tonight.
And now, part two of the Post Malone-a-palooza on Popcast. Popcast Malone, which is a sub-label of Post Malone. Jonah Weiner's calling in from Oakland, from his many rooms in Oakland. Jonah, what's good?
Man, I'm hanging out here. My Versace boxers are on.
Yeah. Tell the people.
I'm checking wrist.
Yeah.
That's how I knew to call you, because I checked wrist, and I was like, oh.
So Jonah is a contributing writer at the New York Times Magazine. That's fine. That's nice. That's not why he's here. Jonah writes for a bunch of other magazines, including Rolling Stone. Also fine. Also nice. Not why he's here. A member of the rap duo Ghost Blazer. Also fine. Also nice. But that's not why he's here. But go cop that Ghost Blazer. The reason Jonah's on the phone today is because I was thinking a lot about Post Malone's public presentation, right? And here's a guy who I think has a very defined public image and yet weirdly has not been interviewed that often. In the current press cycle, Post Malone did a Zane Lowe interview that appeared somewhere on the internet, I guess, around release week. He has done a few kind of like spot Q&A type things, as Jason and I were talking about in part one, which occasionally get him in trouble, like when he says that hip hop doesn't have like emotional meaning and things like that. And so I was looking for someone who had sat with Post Malone for an extended period of time for a magazine profile. And best I can tell, Jonah Weiner, one of one, Rolling Stone, it's just you. Maybe it's someone else. Maybe someone else will email me and point it out to me. But as far as I can tell, you've got the biggest profile of Post Malone going.
Yeah, I think so.
So I wanted to talk to you about, you know, Jason and I were talking a little bit about like Post Malone new dirt bag aesthetic, but you were up close and personal with it. This was in 2017. This is on the previous album, not on the current album cycle, right?
Yeah, he was finishing up Beer Bongs and Bentleys. He was 22. It was November of 2017. I looked at my notes. It was 2 weeks after he got the barbed wire tattooed on his forehead or the crown of thorns, whatever it is. and what else? And Rockstar had been, like, when I was with him, Rockstar had been on the chart at number one for like 5 weeks at that point.
Right. Rockstar is the collaboration with 21 Savage.
I've been popping, man, I feel just like a rock star. All my brothers got that gas and they always be smoking like a rock star. When me call up on no and show up, man, them the shot toss. When my homies pull up on your block, they make that thing go grata-ta-ta. Ay, ay, switch my whip, came back in black, I'm starting saying rest in peace to Bon Scott. Ay, close that door, we blowing smoke, she asked me light a fire like I'm awesome. Ay, act a fool on stage, probably leave my show in a cop car. It was legendary, threw a TV out the window of the montage. On the table, look upon, don't give a damn. Don't your girlfriend is a groupie, she just tryna get in. Saying I'm with the band. Ay, now she acting out of pocket, tryna grab up on my pants. On it, bunnies in my trailer, said I ain't got a man. And they all brought a friend. Yeah, ay.
When I read this story, the thing that probably jumped out at me the most, besides the details, and we'll get into the details later, was that there was something kind of maybe unguarded and maybe a little dim about how he was dealing with you or dealing with press at this moment. I mean, you've interviewed loads of people. I've interviewed loads of people. You can read pretty quickly the level of transparency that someone's giving you kind of right off rip.
Mm-hmm.
What was your initial vibe from sitting with him?
Well, yeah, the initial vibe, I mean, well, so first off, I was trying to think of what other long profiles or, you know, substantive magazine pieces there were with him. And I think that you're right that this is the only one. And I'm actually not even sure if he knew that going into it, which I only say because I looked at my notes and I remembered that. I think when I showed up at his house, so he was renting like a 5-bedroom house in Tarzana in the valley in LA. And, you know, his like 6 buddies, one of whom is his brother, one of whom is his tattoo artist. I don't know who the other 4 were, you know, just kind of friends of his entourage, kind of let me in. And he's upstairs sleeping. And when he comes downstairs, he goes, hey, where's the video crew? And I think he was expecting me to just be like, you know, interviewing him on camera. I was like, no, this is one of those, like, I just have a notebook and this is just going to be print. So he was like a little sleepy at first.
Yeah. And also, that's just as a sidebar, I do think an interesting thing that has happened with artists who are like under 25
yeah.
is the understanding of what an interview is almost exclusively comes with video. And so it is, I think, disorienting when you arrive without a videographer.
Right.
Maybe you should have just held your phone up the whole time, like just been like, no, just talk to me and like, I'll just film you. And it makes you feel more comfortable. Like, I'll just film you anyway. So, okay. So he was a little knocked off guard that you did not come with the full crew.
He might have been sleepy. I mean, this is the thing. So Rockstar is like a huge hit. So he's not, you know, he's far from a nobody at that point, far from it. But, you know, he was at that place in his career where he's paying like $7,000 a month to rent this house with like white marble floors in Tarzana. Mm. He's outfitted it with like white couches. And he's like, he's gotten to the point where like someone in the entourage has like put a Mrs. Meyers hand soap in the guest bathroom, but he's at that level, but there are no hand towels. So like everyone is
so
drying
their
hands.
You've been to my house is what you're telling me. Okay. That's cool.
Do people at the Caramonica household have to dry their hands on like fast food napkins and Kleenex? Cause that's
no,
that's
to be honest, in the guest bathroom, if we're being keeping it 100, it's Missoni towels in the guest bathroom.
So now at the Utah compound, that I think that he was basically closing on this like big Utah compound where he lives now. I have to hope that it's all Missoni.
It better be.
But you know, so he's just at that level where sort of transitional between sort of like tiers in his career. And you know, there's no guarantee that Beer Bongs and Bentleys is going to be as huge as, you know, Rockstar suggests it's going to be. But yeah, so he, you know, he's really nice. He's really friendly. There's probably like a wariness that he was already kind of developing with interviewers because there've been a few kind of, whether it was, you know, kind of people digging up old vines where he...
Oh, yes. And we should say one of those old vines, he used the N-word.
He used the N-word, not a hard E-R, but an A at the end, and kind of like a joking context, but regrettable, ill-advised. Mm-hmm. And also, he'd had this very combative interview with Charlemagne not too long before I sat down with him. So he might have been a little wary up top, but, I mean, essentially, I kind of sat with him for... maybe 5 to 8 hours, and most of that time I'm kind of just next to him while he plays Call of Duty. So he's sort of living
it's important to emphasize, like, I think a thing that people assume when you like profile a famous person is that it's extremely glamorous and that you get to go to these glamorous places, and there's nothing kind of like sexier than like interviewing a famous person. And I cannot overstate how often it is a variation of what you just described. Which is like you are just been inserted into a circumstance that is kind of ongoing with or without you. And like you sort of have to grab the reins of it at some point to be like, we have a thing we have to accomplish here.
That's right. That's right. I mean, you know, look, to my taste, I'd actually much prefer just kind of stepping into someone's life as they'd be living it, as opposed to, the contrivance of, hey, mini golf with Post Malone. But yeah, I mean, essentially he was 22. And he was living like...
The secret of Post Malone is Post Malone's a four handicap. That's like the dark wasp underbelly of Post Malone is that he's a four handicap.
Exactly. He was basically living like the kind of like, more or less like a life that would be indistinguishable from any number of 22-year-olds.
Yeah.
In the sense of like Call of Duty had come out the night before. He'd stayed up till 4 a.m. playing it. The shades are drawn in his house. It was kind of like the maximalist version of that, where he also like... I mean, there's something like a little kind of bleak about this that I think he would acknowledge. I mean, he's sort of a moody guy, and that was one of the things that came out. But like, it's a really bright sunny day, but the shades are drawn because his projector, you know, his video game, like his Xbox projector, like, you know, can't fight the sun. So the shades are drawn. He's in like Stone Island sweatpants, you know, like loves Italian sweatpants, but then like just like a big pajama shirt with like tomato sauce stains on it. He's just like, you know, he's bunkered down. I don't know if he's in between tour dates or what, but like the maximalist part of it is that he's got a sponsorship with Postmates, so he literally never needs to leave his house. He just has like this like infinite credit with Postmates, so he's just like ordering food. And this was a flaw that somehow did not make my piece. I don't know how. Maybe because it felt too spawn, which you know I'm opposed to. But
yeah, so you're not about it.
He had, maybe still has, a deal with Bud Light, who he shouts out.
Oh, he definitely still has one. Yeah, he definitely still has a deal.
So the way it manifested in my experience with him was he had a dedicated like Bud Light fridge, branded Bud Light fridge in his game room that had a Wi-Fi connection. And once it got below a certain level in terms of its stock, a Bud Light delivery person would come and replenish it. So that's what I mean. It's like the maximalist version of like what any 22-year-old might love to spend, you know, a Tuesday doing.
So just while we're talking about important things, important branded opportunities in pop music history, right? What that reminds me of, I don't know if you remember, I think it was the Tommy Lee episode of MTV Cribs where someone will correct me if I'm wrong. So let's say it's 90% Tommy Lee, where he had a Starbucks built into his like game room.
Oh yeah,
an actual Starbucks, like not like a coffee bar. Like I think with branded Starbucks product in his home.
Right.
So the kind of endlessly replenished Bud Light Post Malone fridge is really just an iterative example of a thing that had been innovated already in the 90s.
Do you think Starbucks did, like, when they did their racial sensitivity workshops at their stores, do you think they did one in Tommy Lee's house?
Yeah, that's a good question. Like, do you think is the Tommy Lee house, like, is it a line item on the Starbucks? You know what I mean? Like, is it store number 1277 or something? Wow. What? I mean, yeah, I think to answer your question, it's probably where it was most needed.
So
I don't know. So that's my thought on that. One more while we're just in branding mode. The reason I know that Post Malone still has a deal with Bud Light, and this is where, I mean, look, generally speaking, don't send me anything. Like, I don't want things mostly, but like, someone did send me a Post Malone Bud Light, I want to say tote bag, maybe, or a t-shirt, or a thing of that nature. And then I saw photos of maybe beer cans that have Post Malone's face on them, which I don't have. But to be fair, if I did have, would go into the museum next to like my UGK beer and my like Romeo Santos Dr. Pepper bottle and stuff. You know what I mean? Like, so I would probably, if I saw that at a bodega, I would buy it. But I do at the moment somewhere have like a tote bag that's like a Bud Light Post Malone tote bag. So anyway, whoever sent that, I guess now you got your money's worth.
There you go.
Anyway, back to Post Malone in Tarzana.
The way it shaded into kind of slightly, you know, darker territory, this experience of dude kind of parked out on his couch playing video games, was that there's a bit of a kind of, I don't know, not exactly misanthropy, but like, you know, a budding hermit vibe going on with him,
yeah.
Which you can kind of like, it fully tracks with an experience of listening to his music. Basically, the most dramatic illustration of this was that he had this wild arsenal of guns, handguns, assault rifles, shotguns distributed throughout his house.
And it's also like, so this is, and I'm sure you've encountered a version of this, like every now and again, I'll like go to interview somebody and the publicist will say something to the effect of like, there's going to be ... in the building. Mm. And like, I'd prefer it if you didn't write about it. And to which my response is, if it's out in the open, it's in the story.
Right.
Like that's how it works.
Right.
Like, you know, you don't get to choose what's out in the open, what's not out in the open. So it appears no one had this conversation with Post Malone prior to him inviting you into his home. Certainly thinking there was video cameras coming.
Yeah, right.
And also you've seen recently that Post Malone like bought some kind of property in Utah to like basically make an end of the world bunker kind of vibe.
That's right. Well, that Utah compound figures into this story because he was, I think, just in the he was showing me photos of like the Redfin listing or whatever, and he was in the process of closing on it. It's like 13,000 square foot Utah spot, which must be close to where he shot the Saint-Tropez video. Did you see this?
I actually didn't see the Saint-Tropez video.
The Utah Department of Transit was tweeting to Post Malone thanking him for including like beautiful Utah highways in the video. So I think it's near the house. His publicists actually had thought that he was going to take me to a gun range to like shoot because that's just something he loves doing. I mean, I guess that's his actual like organic, you know, authentic, you know, version of mini golf. Like,
sure.
He loves going to shooting ranges. What was a bit tonally jarring about that, I mean, just at any moment in modern American history, that's tonally jarring, but this happened to be like a couple weeks after the Las Vegas shooting. So it was especially intense to see, you know, just all this artillery.
But I think that's pretty on brand for Post Malone in that Post Malone does not seem to be a person who is hyper attuned to the nuances of how he is being received.
Yeah. Or, I mean, you know, maybe in his case, he just like, he'd say he, and I might kind of believe him, just that he might say he just doesn't care.
Yeah. I mean, that may be so. You've met him. I haven't met him. You know, it's, if he genuinely doesn't care, then like Godspeed and more power to him and so on and so forth. But it, you would think, I mean, this is, look, he's at the age you spoke to him, he's 22. He's a millionaire many times over, living in Tarzana with a dozen guns.
That's right.
And that's, I guess, a version of success. Like he won. Right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, for him, the gun stuff went in a few different directions. Like on the one hand, so like then we go, you know, after he shows me all the guns and just to be clear, you know, people can go read the story and get like the full litany, which might not even be a full litany. I think at a certain point, like I was just listing like, you know, model names of, you know, fire pieces and it just started getting too much. We had to cut some guns out is what I'm saying. Some guns didn't make the final cut, but like there were, it was like a shotgun next to his bed, a Glock behind his pillow, a Glock behind his then girlfriend's pillow. So like that's where it shaded into this kind of paranoid territory, which later on he was talking, I don't know, he's out there in my notes or made the piece, but he pays extra special attention to helicopters and he thinks chemtrails are a thing, unironically. Mm-hmm. So kind of shaded off in that direction. There's also like, man, it gets like, so absurd, but he'd had some beef with Jake Paul not long before.
Oh, I missed this. Is this on the piece?
I think it is.
I don't know if, is it? Okay.
If it's not, I'll give a summary
break
of it
the
now.
News.
Well, it was out there, but somehow, I don't know, some back and forth like YouTube, Jake Paul had somehow, I don't know what it was, but basically gotten Post Malone's address And maybe Post Malone had tweeted something. I don't know what it was, but whatever. Some antipathy between them. And Jake Paul had somehow, like, either put his address online or shot a video where he went to Post Malone's house and so people could figure it out. And so Post Malone was kind of citing that in part as a sort of justification for, you know, the Glock behind his pillow. You know, he's like, I got a lot of money now. I've got people I care for. People are going to come after me. Then there was another version of it, which is like, this is a dude who likes to go to a shooting range and just, you know, blow stuff up. And you know, that was continuous with, like, going back downstairs, and he, like, switches from Call of Duty to Ghost Recon, and he tells me, oh, you see this gun that I'm, like, firing in this video game? That's the gun I just showed you upstairs. So this sort of, like, just 22-year-old dude who loves video games, and his love of guns is fully continuous with that. But, yeah, the kind of undercurrent of the hang had to do with the sort of chemtrails, helicopters, Jake Paul and or the forces of encroaching authoritarianism are going to come for my guns or come for me. Or just come for whatever, our rights, broadly speaking, and I want to be prepared for that. He was interesting, though. Like, he's heterodox, even in terms of ideas like that. Like, he's not a big Donald Trump guy, you know, despite the Bud Light, sort of like, you know, what you might take in terms of the kind of cliched, sort of like very broad strokes version of a dude who comes, you know, who spent formative years in Texas and has a Bud Light dispenser in his fridge. You know, he was not a big Trump dude. But, yeah, that's where it kind of started shading more and more into that kind of paranoid, grimmer kind of bunker mentality. That's sort of where the piece ends.
Did you guys talk about race at all?
Yeah, we did. We did.
Did he strike you as someone who had thought through what it might mean to be a white performer engaging with and profiting off of a black art form?
That was what had kind of animated this tense interview with Charlemagne, where essentially Charlemagne on The Breakfast Club, if I recall correctly, I haven't rewatched that clip recently, but kind of comes pretty much straight out of the gate saying, you know, more or less saying you're a vulture.
Yeah. And Charlemagne asked him, like, what are you doing for Black Lives Matter? Which is, I think, a thing that Charlemagne was doing in multiple interviews at that point. I don't think it was, I think it maybe landed hardest with Post Malone, but I do think it was kind of like a recurring trope.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken.
That's interesting. Well, yeah, certainly it registers as confrontational. I don't mean that in a pejorative sense or anything. It's fine to be confrontational about things like that, but it registers as confrontational. And I brought up that interview with him as a way to kind of get into the subject more broadly of, you know, a white dude working in a black art form. And he admitted that his answer on The Breakfast Club was not particularly sophisticated or satisfying. I think he said something to the extent of, like, what I'm doing to help Black Lives Matter is make good music, something like that.
Right, which that's not it.
That's not it.
Yeah, just for the record.
And he was still pretty unhappy with Charlemagne by the time we got to it. And essentially his answer, and I'd suggest people actually go look at the piece because I'm going to misquote him to a degree, but he was saying a version of, like, I want to get to the point where, like, color lines and boundary lines don't matter, and a white kid who loves hip hop can, he was maybe trying to jump a few steps down the line as far as, like, a reckoning with exactly what his intervention as a white dude in hip hop kind of meant and the issues that it connected to. And I recall asking him, I think it's coming off something he'd said, or the way he'd characterized Charlemagne's line of inquiry. I said, do you believe that there's such a thing as reverse racism? And he said, absolutely. And I said, do you think you've been the target of it? And he said, absolutely. And so that's kind of where he was at that moment in 2017.
I think the last question that I want to ask, there's no wrong answer to this question, Jonah, but I do want an accurate answer. Is there an ode to Post Malone?
Sorry, an ode to Post Malone, as in, like, his signature scent?
Yes. What did he smell like?
All right. I think I have a good answer for this.
I didn't prep you for this. I want people to know I didn't prep you for this. This is the freestyle.
First off, I think that actually, to be fair to him, I think that despite the pajama, like, all-nighter Call of Duty vibe, he actually smelled, like, when I gave him a pound goodbye, he smelled perfectly nice. When he gave me a barefoot ride in his Rolls-Royce Wraith around the neighborhood, his feet were not stinky. I'm taking no shots at his personal hygiene. The house itself basically smelled, like, just crazily, like, spick and span, because he had a bulldog, maybe still does, who was, I'm going to be family paper friendly here, defecating and urinating and ejaculating on every surface in the house constantly. And so it was someone in the entourage's job to be ready with the spick and span. So it smelled like spick and span.
Okay, well, on that note, let's go. Let's go out with a cleansing song. Let's go out with Post Malone's "Wow." Thank you, Jonah, for calling in and sharing those most intimate
details.
It was
awesome to talk with you. And look, this is the thing. He's a really charismatic. He's a fun guy. So, like, I came out of the experience, you know, totally pro Post Malone.
That's what a strong way to end.
Spick and span, notwithstanding.
Spick and spit.
Said she tired, little money, need a big boy. Pull up 20-inch blades like I'm Lil' Troy. Now it's everybody flocking, need a decoy. Shorty mixing up the vodka with the liquor. G-Wagon, 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 G-Wagon. All the housewives pulling up. I got a lot of toys. 720S pumping Fallout Boy. You was talking shit in the beginning. Back when I was feeling unforgiving. I know I pissed you off to see me winning. See the heat glue in my mouth and I be grinning.
Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email me at podcast@nytimes.com and subscribe to podcasts anywhere you get your audio content. You know where that is. Our producer is Pedro Rosado from Headstepper Media. We'll be back next week.
It's a moment when I show up, God, I'm saying wow. Everywhere I go, catch me on the block like a Mutombo. 750 Lambo in the Utah snow. Trunk in the front like a Dumbo, yeah. Cut the roof off like a nip tuck.